Grade 2 Conference, Lecture 37, Teaching the Saints, Part 9. And I want to give you some thumbnail indications or thoughts, rather, about the saints whose names I gave you in the last lecture, some of the things that you might want to bring to the children, or why this or that saint would be a very good one to bring. So let's start with Saint Nicholas. You'll probably work with him in late November, early December, near his day. In some schools, this is a very big deal that there is always a teacher who's not well known to the children, or a community member who's not well known, who is given this very beautiful, elaborate sort of bishop's costume to wear and appears to the children as Saint Nicholas. He's given a very elaborate, beautiful bishop's costume to wear and appears before the children as Saint Nicholas. And he may also be accompanied by Ruprecht, who has become quite a controversial figure in certainly in Europe, where he is known as Black Peter, and raises, of course, many, many questions about racial attitudes that were woven into anything that medieval Europe might have taken up in one way or another. So that's something you have to work out for yourself. So in the event, if your school does this, in many independent Waldorf schools, the class teacher gives the person who's going to portray Saint Nicholas a list of the children in the class with little comments about them. And then St. Nicholas reads how they've done that year and where they may have a little bit to improve. Now, you can imagine, generally, this is only the first three grades, though the older children beg for it. But it would take a week for this poor person to have to read the entire list. And meanwhile, while St. Nicholas is doing all of this very, very seriously and maybe has come in the class with walnuts that are spray-painted gold. Yes, I'm sorry. This is what goes on in so-called independent Waldorf schools. Ruprecht is there, and he may have actual pieces of coal, and he's sort of threatening to give these to children whom he can tell look a little bit mischievous. And meanwhile, Ruprecht is meant to be doing himself very mischievous things in the class, like opening up lunch boxes or trying on people's coats, and he gets scolded, usually just by a look or two from St. Nicholas. That's enough. So it's very, very charming and really a lot of fun and very meaningful. The children really take this sort of thing seriously, that even though St. Nicholas is basically saying to them what the poor class teacher says every day and will say for the next 6 years every day, but it's a very special event nonetheless. And you can see that the reward for doing well and trying hard is gold, and the reward, we could say, for not doing so well, for not really helping your fellow students or helping Mother Nature, is a piece of coal. So you see that even way back then it was understood that if you are not acting in the right way in our world, even today, you tend to be enlarging the carbon footprint. That's what the coal represents, really. Proliferation of carbon dioxide in the air. Well, anyway, let's just go on to the story. Where does all of that come from? Not all of the St. Nicholas event is really connected with his actual life But he was indeed a real bishop, a man who made important decisions, in fact, among the early church fathers, but that's not what we tell the children. We tell them about three stories, one involving a shipwreck, or a near shipwreck, which St. Nicholas was able to bring salvation through his fervent prayers. A wonderful story about him, which again you may or may not want to share, is that when he was born and the nurse took him from his mother shortly after birth to give him his first bath then and there, and you can see that maybe they didn't really understand the importance of the colostrum and things like that, and keeping that intact, that as soon as they tried to lay him down in the water, he stood upright with his arms crossed over his little chest and looking up beatifically towards the heavens. And he stood there for quite a while, clearly in prayer. And all of the women in that room were just astonished at this. And you'll hear a story somewhat like this in grade 5, or you'll tell such a story about Zarathustra, who was born laughing and also was able to defend himself against those who tried to kill him as a tiny newborn babe. And of course, we also heard about the Christ child appearing before St. Christopher. So very interesting, these individuals who at birth already show the traces of who they are and tell us in a way that they are old souls who don't need to really go through an entire childhood. And St. Nicholas, though himself, we might say, didn't need childhood, but he had a very great part in his heart for children. And one of the wonderful stories about him, tell this at your own discretion, is about three little boys who got lost in the woods and ended up at an inn and asked the innkeeper if they could spend the night there. And the innkeeper said they could and told him, in fact, you will have a wonderful sleep here. You won't even be disturbed by any dreams. And when they were sound asleep, he went up to their room, took off their clothing so that he could sell it for a pittance, but that's something for him. And then when he saw their nice, plump bodies, he thought, my goodness, I could do something with that as well. Maybe not necessarily what you're thinking, but what he thought was to actually put them in boiling pickling brine and pickle them so that later on when all of their human features had been dissolved, he could sell them as something edible. And this is what he did. And he put them in a big oaken bucket, not bucket, but barrel rather, and sealed it up, waiting for the full pickling process to occur. Well, that night, St. Nicholas, who by this time was already a very distinguished bishop, had a disturbing dream. And he dreamt about these three boys who were in great danger. And he found his way to the inn. And there he sat down, and the innkeeper just fell all over himself, fawning to help St. Nicholas to a good meal. What can I do for you? You know, Bishop, please, I'm so honored to have you here. And St. Nicholas pointed to the barrel and said, I'd like some of what's being pickled in there. And the innkeeper grew very, very pale and began to tremble. And Nicholas said, why do you delay? Is the pickling not far enough along? Is it perhaps something you just pickled this very morning or last night, and the innkeeper fell on the floor and begged Nicholas's forgiveness. And Nicholas had him open up the barrel, prayed fervently on his hands and knees for the boy's deliverance, and suddenly they began to move a little bit, and one head after another poked out of the pickling juice and looked over the barrel and wondered greatly at the deep, deep sleep they had had, and what were they doing in this barrel, and where were their clothes? And the innkeeper felt that all was lost, but Nicholas forgave him, and said that he should do no such ill to any of his guests again. So that's one of the St. Nicholas stories, and so his connection with children and this remarkable ability he had to bring those who had died to life. That's not an inconsequential thing. And the other story about him involves, I won't go into as much detail, but three daughters of a man who had run on difficult times, lost his money, and he was not able to give them dowry, something you'll have to explain to the children, so that instead of being able to marry the men they loved, because you could not marry without a dowry, they would have to be sold into enslavement. So we see we're still, you know, not that far from Roman times, even though we have a bishop here and Christianity is spreading. But these girls would be sold into slavery rather than being able to have their dowry. And each night, the night before the girl was to be sold into slavery, a bag of gold was thrown into the merchant's room. And when he opened it, he realized there was enough money there to buy his daughter a dowry so that she could marry the man she loved. It happened twice, two nights in a row. The third night, he sneaked outside so that he could see who it was who, under the cover of darkness, was throwing these bags of gold. And he discovered it was Nicholas, who was not yet a bishop, who was at this time just a wealthy young man in the city. And Nicholas refused to let this man tell anyone of what he was doing. But probably little by little, the news leaked out, the word spread. And from that day forth, Nicholas has been associated with these three bags of gold, which in time, as symbolism does to things, got simplified into three golden balls. And very interestingly, this, though many of you perhaps have never seen this symbol, but this was the symbol for the pawn shop for probably well over 1,000 years. Because what happens in the pawn shop, a person who's desperate, who desperately needs some money, is able, though often not in the nicest way possible, but they're able to bring something to that pawn shop and receive gold or its equivalent in return. So the pawnbrokers presented themselves as sort of patronized by St. Nicholas, though they've come very, very far from his original intentions. But this is something very interesting, how St. Nicholas also, because of this, the idea of leaving gifts at night that people discover the very next day. And this then eventually became the idea of a golden nut in your slipper or your shoe found in the morning, or a lump of coal. And who put the coal in couldn't be the good St. Nicholas, had to be someone with him. So these stories give us very, very wonderful picture. And there are more such stories besides of Nicholas. I just, you know, bring especially that last one to you of the three daughters, the three bags of gold, and how to this day that still lives on in a remarkable symbolic way. And of course, Nicholas, Claus, Santa Claus, the name also continues, and Father Christmas, this very powerful symbol, although Santa Claus himself, it is said, was really invented by the Coca-Cola company in its promotional work in the 1920s. So let's go on to yet another one of these top-like saints. And another interesting figure is, of course, Saint Martin. You are going to probably in your school, because many public schools do this as well as private Waldorf schools, the Martinmas celebration, in which the children walk through a dark spot, which might be the campus of the school or a park, if they can, near water, holding their Martinmas lanterns. Sometimes schools' insurance policies forbid the children to put real candles in those lanterns. Instead, they have little LED, little battery-powered lights. And even that still is, for many children today, better than nothing, although the candle, the light flame, would really be so much more powerful. And this particular, the lantern side, actually comes from the very end of Martin's life, when he died, and lights were put on his coffin, candles or tallow lights emblazoned his coffin, and he had said that he should be put in his coffin, it should be put in the river, and let the river water take him then to the cemetery where he was to be buried, for he, by the end of his life, was also a leading man of the church. But the problem was the cemetery was upstream, upriver, not downriver, but that's what he had commanded. So candles and all, his coffin was placed in the river, and though the river kept running its usual way downstream, to everybody's wonder, Martin's coffin floated upstream and finally was washed ashore at the cemetery where he was buried. But the better known story, which is not really commemorated in the celebration, is that Martin, meeting a beggar who begged him for warmth, cut his great cloak in half, and was able to share it with the beggar. And this cloak, this red cloak, is something that only Roman commanders, important men in the Roman military, were given. A woolen cloak, which actually was double fold, so it was possible for Martin to find the halfway division very readily. And then, at this time, Martin was still a Roman soldier, a Roman officer. But that night, then, he encounters the Christ being in a dream, and the Christ says, "I was the beggar, and you shared with me your cloak. And what you do to anyone, know that you are doing it to me." And this led Martin, then, to realize that he could not kill another human being, that this would mean, in a way, killing Jesus all over again, and he would not do that. So out of his newly discovered Christian revelation, he announced to his commander that he would not fight. He refused to fight anymore, even if it meant that he must be then, as a coward, as a deserter, executed himself. Some have said the commander was Julian, later known as Julian the Apostate, who became a great fighter against Christianity, the last Roman emperor, actually, to want to root Christianity out. But whether it was or not, the commander did not have Martin killed immediately, but rather imprisoned, put in chains. And then some have said there was an eclipse the next day, and the opposing army fled in fear. Others said that before the war, the battle ensued. Emissaries from the opposing force came to the Romans and surrendered. In any case, the battle did not happen, and Julian allowed Martin, whom he cared for a lot, to be freed, and Martin then went on leaving the military and becoming instead a man of the church. A very important figure as well. Some legends have it that he was St. Patrick's uncle and introduced Patrick to very different monastic ideas that the church that St. Martin promulgated in France was one in which men and women were equal, and some have said that actually priests were able to marry. Many ideas that to this day are still kind of revolutionary for the church. But we could also say that Martin was perhaps the first pacifist, the first war protester. And isn't it interesting that the Armistice Day, the day in which peace was declared between the opposing sides in the Great War, World War I, was November 11th, Martinmas Day. So an understanding of what kind of impulse Martin brought, very, very powerful one for our time as well. We can see that there's a kind of modernity to these figures, that Nicholas is quietly protesting the dowry and the enslaving of women, and that Martin is quietly protesting war altogether and the state-approved murder of those with whom we disagree. Once again, these stories are changers. These individuals are game changers in attitudes and in mores, and have tremendous historical importance, which tends to be forgotten or glossed over today because we don't want to hear anything about people who were saints, you know. So good thing, at least in Waldorf schools, children learn them. We'll go on to hear about some of the other saints in the next lecture.